Well, what is Moody's man? Not man, Moody's man. We're Moody's mammon.
Yep.
We're Moody's men. But this is about magazine on RTR.
Yakai aloha, this is RTR FM Moody's Mag. Welcome. How are you, Jody? Good for you joining us.
Oh, Jim, it's nice to be here. Happy New Year, my first show
this
back
year
in the RTR studios for 2024. Nice to be here. Nick's on some study break.
Study break on assignment. No, runner-up for Elder of the Year last year was away. Him and I were on stage together. And, we supported each other, but he supported me more because I won the award. He didn't. So I had to act my age and be an elder that night at the... Well, there you go. And I don't believe I'm an elder, but there you go. And we've got some guests. Exciting program today, talking bush tucker, nature foods, and everything that goes with it. I was fortunate enough just recently to win a raffle. So I had to go down to this business that was... right next door to a morgue, or used to be. But we won't talk about the morgue. We'll talk about Gather Foods, and we've got guests in today that'll tell us all about Gather Foods. And lovely lady I've known forever, or it seems like, Dale Tilbrook, who's going to tell us also, an expert, Jody, in everything that's bush, everything that's tucker.
I've looked at the websites for both of you, and it's just amazing. And it's just the burst of colour, and just makes your mouth water. Beautiful, beautiful.
So we'll introduce them shortly after we go to a song. But this is RTR FM 92.1. If you're interested in what we're talking about, and you might want to send a message to Jerry Matura and Dale Tilbrook, 0405 921 921, or even an email. I can't see what the email is. RTRFM, I think, something like that. This is a show, and we're going to Noongar Radio and Great Southern FM, and spreading good news stories. First Nations people, sadly, there's too much bad news, eh, Jody? And of course, you're an awardee from a long time running a program down the road,
yeah,
and won another award.
Very blessed.
You keep winning these awards, Jody.
Oh, but you know, look, we're both wearing our Stolen Generation T-shirts today, our Yokai T-shirts, and I was about to go to bed last night, Jim, and I was flicking around on the TV, and I came across NITV, and a very heartfelt story on New Norcia, and it was made in 2000, and some of those people I knew and I recognised, and many of course no longer with us. It was so sad.
The Habits of New Norcia, was it?
Yes, it was the Habits of New Norcia, made in 2000, and there was people to that day that still couldn't talk about what they'd endured as a child, the conditions they lived under. It was absolutely atrocious, and I'd never seen it before, and it was just very sad.
Yes, well, eyes and ears open. To keep them open, people, listeners to Moody's Mag, as we're about to release a documentary called Genocide in the Wildflower State. That's coming up, and we'll have that available for our listeners to have a tune in to see what genocide's all about in this state. But let's not talk bad things. We're going to be talking good things today. That's what the program's all about, Moody's Mag. Jody, great to have you back.
Nice to be here.
As I say, Nick is on assignment, but also probably hopefully finishing off assignments. I don't know why people want to be involved in academia, but really, I don't know. But, you know, who
I'd
knows?
Much rather talk about food.
Which we're going to do today. But look, you touched on New Norcia Mission. Listeners, if you didn't know already, the Royal Commission into Aged Care Services, the Royal Commission into Kiddie Porn, it wasn't even Kiddie Porn, Sex Crimes Against Children. No, that is not the right name still. Royal Commission into Historical Sex Incidents of Child Sex. Anyway, that's what the Royal Commission was about. But it showed that New Norcia Mission was the worst place in Australia for pedophilia. So there, that's why you saw it on NITV last night. Mm. So if you didn't see Habits of Eunorsia last night, you probably can get it off YouTube. Mm. Have a look at it and see what the real world is about, and especially now that it's post-referendum. These are the sorts of things you needed to know before you voted no. If you voted no because you didn't know, well, that's, you've got a real problem out there. And listeners to RTR-FM have really been yes voters, and it's great to see that RTR-FM have got their own Reconciliation Action Plan. Yeah. Hey, if you want to know about that, text us 0405921921 because Jodie's face is in there. Colour, not a black and white photo, a coloured photo of us, the three of us.
It's a pretty cool place to come on a Thursday morning and hang out, isn't it?
It is. Look, we're about to go to a song, and then I'll introduce you to our amazing guests that are in the studio today to talk about real food, the real food that's been around for thousands of generations, dare I say, and we're starting to recognise now. Let's go to a song.
Ah, what a beautiful song, Love and Caring by the Ripple Effect Band, all the way from Maningrida in the Northern Territory. Some beautiful music's come out of that region over the years. And this is the Mordich Mag program on this Thursday morning. Good to have your company. Jim Morrison and Jodie Hoffman in the studio with you. And we are up for an absolute treat this hour because we are talking food. Got some extraordinary people in the studio with us. Dale Tilbrook, a Wudandi Bibbulmun woman, as well as Jerry Matera, Noongar, traditional landowner, talking food. I'm excited, Jim. I'm going to throw over to you because I feel that just want to get this one rolling.
We do, and I've got a bone to pick with some of the radio people in on this radio, on RTR-FM, because they're always playing blackfella music, but they're not telling me, they're not sharing it with me. That's a shame job, eh? And these whitefellas playing my music and they don't tell me. So Ripple Effect is one of those that I discovered last week, and Pam, who does the breakfast show, is a marvellous person. And if you haven't heard her show yet, you've got to tune in after the acknowledgement of country. Every morning this radio station does a welcome to country. And so it gives an indication of what this radio station's all about. But our breakfast show, Pam, she's a wonderful person and does some great music too. So yeah, I'm brown nosing, aren't I? Okay, so we've got two wonderful guests in the show, Jerry Matera and Dale Tilbrook. So firstly, Dale, who's your mob and where are you from?
Oh, well, I'm always say that my heart is in many different places in WA because even though my traditional country is Wurundjeri country, Busselton, Margaret River, Augusta, that area, I was actually born in Port Hedland and lived my early life in the Pilbara and the Kimberley, came to the southwest, came to Perth and then went and lived overseas for 10 years. Wow. Came back to Australia, hooked up with a very special elder who'd been instrumental in my teenage years and making sure that I stayed connected with culture. And then eventually he talked me into starting a business with culture. So that's who I am and where I'm from, which is a bit of everywhere.
Good. Welcome back.
Thank you.
Jerry Matera, who are you mobbing? Where are you from?
Collards, from Wagen, so Wilman Country, Ballardong. In the early days, I actually struggled with identity. Mm. And I'm part of the LGBTQA+ community, but also Noongar. And to really understand what being Noongar is, I struggled with for a very long time. And it wasn't until being immersed in it and being, you know, being Noongar and being connected to country and understanding that and the Katajan, so knowledge, and your Mort family. And I think I've been on a path for probably 15 years.
Wow.
And native food has been a big part of that. And learning about native food and culture from that standpoint has been life-changing.
Well, welcome to Mordich Mag. It's so good to hear from you and tell us about the challenges, which you didn't need to do, but I'm glad you did. It might make you feel a bit better and hopefully get through the
good.
Yeah, the program is about good news stories, and it's just great to have Jerry and Dale as part of the show today. And in their own right, they're going to tell you a little bit about themselves and why they're here. But look, it was great to have them on the show because just last week I went to their warehouse. It's just a huge warehouse. and picked up a prize that I won in a raffle at the Black Coffee venture that Christine Ross is involved. A big shout out to Christine Ross. The Black Coffee event was all about black business. So we're talking to black business people. So, Jerry, over and above your identity issues, yep. You've now struck it big time. I've got to say big time because Aboriginal business, to me, any Aboriginal business that is anywhere near successful, and I'm sure yours is.
Yep.
So tell us about the challenge of being involved in that and what you're currently doing. Because, I mean, I've known the business that you've been involved in and probably bought a range of products too, including the Lemon Myrtle stuff. But
yep.
Tell us your interest. And I guess it links up to old girl here. You keep calling her old
yeah,
girl.
Yeah. Look, so maybe a lot of people may not know, but I've been in the food industry nearly 30 years. So I'm a chef by trade. And went through the TAFE system, and you don't learn about native food in traditional TAFE colleges. And then coming out of, the restaurant scene, I've worked at, I did my apprenticeship at Observation City. I worked under Chris Taylor, who's now head chef at Fraser's. So I've worked under some incredible chefs with sort of the Mediterranean cuisines. And then getting into native food, I've been doing that now for about 15 years. Been Arnie Dale's apprentice, apprentice for about that time, learning about native foods. Gather Foods, we launched in about 2016, so 9 years ago. It started off doing a lot of, we had a deli in Inglewood, which sort of did sort of artisan providor food, charcuterie, cheeses and all those sorts of things. And we tried to, incorporate native food where we could. What I learnt, the biggest lesson I've learned in business is the sessionability of food. So how do you make food that people are eating more of more often? The business has gone under a bit of a transformation, I would say, over the last 3 years. So we now do events and catering. So it's sort of three arms to the business, events and catering. We do, weddings and events. We make ice cream, so native food. So we launched the first native food ice cream a year ago. Took out a global award, Indigenous ice cream to take out a global award at ice cream award. And we won best condiment in Australia. And we just, myriad of small business awards over the last couple of years as well. But I haven't been alone in that. Arnie's been instrumental, yeah.
So Auntie Dale Tilbrook has been a guest of Rich Mag. Twice now, I think, talking about a range of things. Your own business out at West Swan, Middle Swan?
In the Swan Valley.
Yep.
Yeah. So how did you connect up with this man here?
Oh, okay. So phone call from Jerry many years ago saying, I want to know what you know, basically. He was a bit more polite in saying that. But
than he is now.
We got together and, we have this mutual love of food and particularly bush food. So we've been talking together about bush food for all these years, finding ways to work together because I've had my own business doing Aboriginal cultural experiences and having a small gallery in the Swan Valley for 25 years. Jerry's done his various things. So getting together is not always easy when you're really busy, but we finally found a way to work together. So we've launched a joint, first in Australia, Aboriginal wholesalers of Australian native foods or Australian native edibles or bush tucker or bush food, whatever you want to call it. But this has given us a real opportunity to work together, and we love this, and we've got huge plans for the future.
Dale's the one that doesn't celebrate the good times very often. And one of the reasons why I wanted to launch the wholesale business with Dale was to say a big thank you. But people may not know this, but Dale helped me get food onto Qantas. So we had six salads rotating on Qantas, the 787 to London, all the domestic flights, and we put on a native spread for them on the inaugural 787 to London before COVID. And COVID obviously messed things up. But she has been amazing, and I've just been her apprentice for 15 years, and it's been unbelievable, life-changing.
This is overwhelming. I'm just so humbled about the experience here in the studio. I like to think that I'm a bit of a chef, but nothing like what we've got here, Jody?
Well, I don't think we can go any further with Dale and Jerry without finding out about the global award-winning ice cream, what it was.
You're an ice cream freak, aren't you? I know. You want to know more about ice cream.
So sessionability, like I spoke about, is something that we wanted to create a range that people will eat. So the four flavours globally that people... So when you walk into a supermarket, people are going to your vanilla, your chocolate, your sort of caramel flavour, and like a cookies and cream. So based on those four global trendsetters, we kind of incorporated a native flavour into those blends. It took us about 12 months, probably 18 months, to come up with the flavour combination. So we launched a saltbush caramel. Yeah. So in that, saltbush and the sandalwood caramelised, it gives it that real nutty flavour, is amazing. And obviously Dale was instrumental in the early days getting that profiling done. Wattle seed, so chocolate wattle seed is another blend that we've done. Cookies and cream using a macadamia nut. A lot of people don't know that macadamia nut is an Australian nut. People think it comes from overseas, but it doesn't. So we've used that in a cookies and cream. And what have I missed? And then we've got a vanilla and bush honey vanilla.
Well, if you just tuned in, this is Moody's Bag on RTR FM. I think you should tune in. Go and tell your mob to come and listen in to this radio show, Moody Schmag, because if you don't hear it today, you can tune in later on today. It'll be streamed on. We're up to about 150 podcasts now, so you can actually listen to a number of podcasts. Hey, Jody. Let's have a break. Let's go to a song. As I say, tune in because there's a lot more to be heard because I've got these wonderful people in the studio right through until the finish of the show. Let's go to a song.
RTRFM. And welcome back to the Moorditch Mag program. Jody and Jim in the studio with you this morning with our special guest Dale Tilbrook and Jerry Matera, and we are talking food. And Jerry, we're just while that music was playing, you were just talking about different aspects of the work that you're doing. Let our audience know what you were just saying.
Listen, Kerri-Ann Cox.
Oh, Kerri-Ann Cox, of
course. Bush Tucker song. Oh, Beagle Bay Girl.
Yes.
Beagle Bay up there.
Beautiful voice.
Yeah, lovely.
Beagle. Been making music for decades too.
She has, eh? So, appropriate song, Bush Tucker. And welcome back, Jerry and Dale, talking about this exciting event. The more I hear about these two, the more excited I am. But they didn't bring any ice cream in, so maybe next time.
We're just down the road. Come whenever you like.
So you went into deli business, but now you're sort of really concentrating on a different market. And when I saw you last week, you were going on to visit a restaurant. You may be going into a restaurant or looking at other options.
Yeah, good. Look, we have put a proposal together to take on a waterfront restaurant in Perth. So it'll be a first for Perth. I don't want to jinx it, but it's definitely something where... Look, to go back a couple of steps, I think when you understand culture and you understand the connection to land and it's getting hotter, global warming, and being conscious of all of that, it blows my mind that people aren't using native food more often, particularly in home when they're cooking, and there's so many alternatives to using native food at home in your kitchen. And the part that, you know, you can walk into Bunnings now and there's Tucker Bush, which is a business that provides native food in there. And from that aspect around how do we use native food, how do we bring awareness to more native food? And that narrative around native food has kind of been hijacked for a little while from non-Indigenous businesses that are using native food, putting dot paintings on their products and kind of confusing the marketplace around, giving the consumer the idea that there's some sort of connection to an Aboriginal person or community. So, teaming up with Dale Apar, that was about being honest and transparent about who we are, also working with other Aboriginal businesses around sourcing local native foods. And what was the most profound thing is that the native food industry is predominantly run by non-Indigenous people.
Sure.
And the minority is, some Aboriginal people or communities that are trying to grow native food.
Mm. Or they're wild harvesting, but the wild harvest is at the end of the food chain. So they're the people who get paid the least amount of money. And then the people along the way who are doing the value adding are really able to had huge markups and profits for themselves. So something that might be $20 a kilo to the picker ends up on the internet at $600 a kilo. Yeah. And you can't really see where that value adding is justified in terms of the end price. So yeah, about 1% participation at the moment for Aboriginal people in the bush food industry. And, you know, the bush food industry that we've got at the moment is very much a leftover from how the bush food industry started. And sometimes, if I'm being unkind, I'd say, you know, it was the white men from the east, not the wise men from the east. And it's true because, you know, these people got together and formed associations. They chose the 14 hero ingredients that would be grown and promoted. And, you know, you see that very much in what's accessible bush food at the moment. Mm. But we've got 6,500 identified native edible plants. Wow. And so there is a lot of work to be done in, wow, you know, bringing more of these species to people's attention and to their tables.
It's interesting what you say there, Dale, because sometimes it's not about what you tell people, it's what you don't tell them. And the presumption is there, if you're going somewhere and you're eating bush tucker and you're paying top dollar for it, that there's an Indigenous connection. But what you're saying is that largely that's not the case.
Correct, yeah. Largely that is not the case. And that's what Jerry and I want to change in the future. You know, one is raising awareness of the state of the industry at the moment, and then looking at the opportunities for the future. And we've identified some low-hanging fruit. So hopefully, you know, it'll be stuff that we're doing in the future that will enable more Aboriginal people to enter the industry and get the direct benefit from traditional food.
Well, it sounds like a real cutthroat business that you're leading the field in now. So we've got to watch this space and see how you are going. There's a few challenges there. The dominant culture has sort of tried to lead us up a garden path, I would have thought. And there isn't enough opportunities for us. So thank you for taking the time to talk to us. Not that we're going anywhere yet, but, you know, the products you're talking about, more than 6,000 products that are edible.
Yep, plants, yep.
And you'd be working with, what, a proportion of that?
Oh, if you're working with 30, it's a lot.
Wow. So what's the further opportunities? I mean, from your business point of view, I went to see your warehouse. Do you have another operation where small goods or with that, or is that?
No, we went away. So we made a conscious decision a year and a half ago to leave the retail sector.
Right.
So now we have an online store. So we wanted to, you know, rather than going micro, we wanted to go macro. How do we sell our hampers, for example, to someone in Melbourne or, you know, Albany or whatever? So we put our store online, which was amazing to do. Then we've invented products to sit inside our hampers. I know that you've trialed some of our hamper products. But I think, you know, to Dale's point, history can be told through food. I mean, Bruce Pascoe said this in Dark Emu that, you know, post-European settlement, everyone started eating lamb and potatoes. And then, you know, as immigration changed, lots of different people came from lots of different countries and they were eating everything. When we're consuming food, we're eating everything but Australian food. You know, so Chinese, Japanese, American, African, Indian. When you go out, that's what people are consuming. But in reality, when you're talking about global warming particularly and how the food can survive in, you know, hot spaces, doesn't rely on a lot of water, we should be, you know, yes, gravitating towards those things and eating it. But when you look at people's gardens, they're growing plants that aren't from here, or they're growing plants that aren't edible. And it blows my mind. When you go into my garden, everything's edible. Everything that I have in my garden is edible. Saltbush, people could use that, grow that in their backyard, get rid of sacks of salt from their cupboards, start using bush salt, saltbush, that they can grow in their garden. So those are the sorts of mindsets that people got to change. And learning about bush food, for me, under Dale, has been an incredible eye-opener. Because if I don't know if anyone saw the Four Corners show yesterday around what Coles is doing, particularly around the wine sector, badging up wine that, you know, putting labels on bottles of wine that and telling a story that is actually factually incorrect, and the location on the wine bottle when the ABC reporter went to the address, it was actually a Coles head office in Melbourne. And that's what I'm saying about truth-telling and also honesty and transparency should also be told through food. Mm. And that's the journey that we've been on for 15 years.
Yeah. And, you know, it goes beyond that too. I mean, we know of medicines. We know of what people like, and I had her on the show, Vivian Hansen, in her book on medicines and stuff. And she's tried to tell me about some medicines, but went in one ear and out the other because you don't hear enough about that. So there is that relationship with medicines as well that we don't hear enough about. You know, thousands of generations before Cook, we've had food and medicine. So that's
correct.
And is that something that you've sort of investigated too, Dale?
Yes, and, you know, truly food is our medicine and medicine is our food to a large extent. You know, if you look at the nutrient values of a lot of our native foods, they are superior. That's why they get called superfoods. But we didn't call them superfoods, we just called them food, and we ate them as food. I mean, wattle seed is one of my favourites, and, you know, one that has huge potential as an export industry because of its nutritional profile. You know, generally speaking, you're looking at very high protein, up to 30%. You're looking at high values of zinc, magnesium, calcium and iron. It's naturally low GI, so it's great for people with diabetes. 40% dietary fiber. What's not to love? And yet most of the wattle seed that grows in this country drops to the ground. But just because folks in the city or folks overseas want wattle seed for its functional use in improving the nutritional value of baked goods, bread and other baked goods, doesn't mean to say they should have it. So there's a huge case for growing wattle seed in plantation, and that's the commodification of that food. That's a commercial decision. But on country, we will still have our beautiful wattle seeds that are growing where they've always grown, being picked by women on country, because mostly the merin or the vegetable foods are the preserve of women, and darch or the meat foods are the preserve of men. So those particular wild harvest situations can lend themselves to creating niche food products, which can directly benefit people on country. So people can stay on country and derive an income from country. And some of our new technologies, like blockchain technologies, can help the development of industries like wattle seed so that the provenance of the food can be guaranteed. And so people who want to make their buying decisions based on wanting to help Aboriginal people or disadvantaged people can say, I want to buy my wattle seed from an Aboriginal community in the Kimberley, can buy that particular wattle seed. And of course, every wattle seed that's edible will have a different flavour profile. So that's another element to explore.
So Dale, where would we use wattle seed? Give us some examples of what sort of foods
well,
we would
apart from Jerry's ice cream, you mean? So wattle seed is mainly used as a flavouring at the moment. So you can use it in cakes and biscuits and ice cream. You can use it in savoury cooking as well. You can add it to stews and casseroles to add those umami flavours, and also to thicken, because wattle seed will attract moisture, so that'll help thicken your stews and casseroles. In the old days, we would just mix the parched wattle seed that had been cleaned and ground up into a flour with water, and we'd either eat that paste or we'd make them into little bread cakes, little flat bread cakes baked in the ashes, and eat those little bread cakes, which we call manjali. Not
If you just tuned in, this is RTRFM 92.1. On Wadjuk Country with Noongar Radio and Minang Country, Great Southern FM. If you like what you're hearing, 0405 921 921, or tune in later online to hear this fantastic program about bush tucker. And you mentioned the Kimberley. I want to talk some more about the Kimberley a little later. What's that thing that's equivalent to an orange that's grown in the Kimberley? This is out of your territory, I know. A little gubbage?
Gubbage. There you go.
Let's go to Kimberley. Let's listen to Pigram Brothers and their great song, I Like Barefoot Kids. And we'll come back and talk a little about this food that we're hearing about. So stay tuned. Keep it locked to RTR FM 92.1.
Hey, we've featured some awesome musos on the program today. And I don't know how long ago the Pigram Brothers from Broome started up, but they started as scrap metal.
Yes.
And then their kids grew up and they were the little piggies. And,
yes.
Oh, barefoot
and
kids.
Naomi Pigram. I'm going to play one of her songs today.
But what Pigram a family. Brothers, yeah. I can imagine sitting around the campfire up there with guitars and just magical. Pigram Brothers here on the Mooditj Mag program. Jim and Jody in the studio with you today, and we're talking all things bush tucker. We're talking salt bush. We're talking wattle seeds. We're talking a whole lot of stuff with Dale Tilbrook and Jerry Matera. And Dale, you're not long back from New Zealand. Tell us what you were doing there.
Okay, yes. I went with Tourism WA with seven other tourism operators, Aboriginal tourism operators.
Wow.
From WA to first Melbourne, then Sydney, then Auckland to present on Aboriginal tourism product. And one of the other operators, funnily enough, was a little piggy.
Ah,
get out of here.
Pigram. Who runs his own.
That's why we've got to play a song.
Who runs his own tourism business, Nullarchia Tours in Broome. Really talented operator. And we had, as I said, eight of us in total. So we're there promoting what we do as individuals in our tourism businesses. And, of course, my tourism business is based on bush food. So I'm there talking about what tourists can experience when they come and sign up for one of my experiences. So bush tucker talk and tastings or bush tucker and well-being. But we're generally there also to promote Aboriginal tourism in Western Australia. So we did that, and would you believe we did that Monday to Friday 1 week. So
wow.
It was a pretty full-on trip, but fabulous.
And Dale, you've been doing this for 25 years.
Yes.
How has it grown with Aboriginal businesses in Western Australia in that time?
Well, I'm also a WAITOC member. And, you know, we're so lucky in Western Australia that we've got WAITOC. I'm a foundation member of WAITOC, and now I'm the female patron of WAITOC.
And for our listeners,
WAITOC is the Western Australian Indigenous Tourism Operators Council. So, there, you know, we had 10 businesses when we first got together, and now on our latest map, we've got 150. And these operators are supported in their business development by WAITOC. So if you're an emerging business, you get the level of support that you need to cement the foundations of your business. And then you're encouraged to become a market-ready business. So you're out there really promoting yourself to the world, and then you aspire to be an export-ready business. So you're ready to actually engage with inbound tourism operators or destination marketing companies, so that you're actually getting bookings before the customer comes to Australia, which is really good, because if you've got those forward bookings, you've got those that guaranteed income into the future.
Yeah.
So it's a complex business, tourism. And you really need that support and guidance if you're really going to make it in tourism, because tourism marketing channels are confusing if you don't know what's going on. So WAITOC is our secret weapon here in WA.
Oh, if you've tuned in, we're talking bush tucker on RTR FM 92.1 Noongar Radio and Great Southern FM. So supply then. There's a challenge, I guess. Where does your supplies come from? And maybe what are the top 10 products you have we can talk about in the next little while. But I'm thinking there is a challenge around supplies Am I right there? Do you have enough people out there investigating what products?
Aboriginal
and
people?
And how do we overcome that? Yeah.
No. There's definitely not enough integration and participation. So we always try and support other local Aboriginal businesses or Aboriginal businesses in general across Australia. Out of the 68, we buy from 68 growers. Out of those, only five are Aboriginal. And that's because, sorry, six, including Auntie Dale, because there is only that we get from. So there's a big market. And when I talk about supply, supplying enough for us to use, not like a couple of kilos or five here, talking commercialised operations, there's five that we deal with. Mm-hmm. So there is a big gap. And then, so, you know, Auntie Dale and I have been working on a bit of a plan in the background to how we promote and grow and develop a native food industry here. So we won't talk about that today, but we've definitely got some plans in place around what that looks like in
good.
The future.
Okay.
Because when you're talking Aboriginal businesses, it is certainly difficult, you know, I've been in business 20 years. Over the last 20 years, it is difficult when you're operating a business that is reliant on the consumer, not reliant on native title. Like if you're an Aboriginal person, you know, in Balkyu country or in the Pilbara, Nyalama or Yindjibarndi, then you've got native title to sort of help assist getting work. Here we don't. And so trying to, convince the consumer that's walking into an IGA store to pick our ice cream over a Ben and Jerry's is difficult. So using native food in a way that's authentic hopefully gives them, can put our product forward other than buying from an international business and buying from a local business. And that's been challenging. But also when you think about the sustainability part that I spoke about earlier, how do we actually... the biggest challenge is when you're participating even in the event space and we're talking weddings. So how does an Aboriginal business cater for a person's wedding? And we've done many, many, many weddings. In fact, yesterday we were listed as the winner of the Wedding Diaries magazine as what top 10 wedding provider in WA.
Yeah, should have brought some bubbly in with you.
Yeah.
Next time. Okay.
But trying to get a bride and a groom and bride to select us based on wanting to have a native food experience at their wedding, so their special day, whether Aboriginal or not, has been challenging. And particularly when people are used to, predominantly a lot of people eating Italian food at a wedding, how do we convince them to have a native food experience? But to compete, we don't want handouts. How do we compete in an area and elevate our offering? Because we don't want to... We don't want the barbecue. We don't want the morning tea at a corporate office that they just want sausage rolls and party pies. How do we cater for something really elegant on a beachfront or in someone's home? Mm. And weddings particularly, I've noticed in the last 5 years, based on people's budgets, people are going away from the big white weddings in a big convention centre costing $20,000, $30,000 to a backyard or food trucks. I mean, one lady I read in a magazine had chicken treat at her wedding, right? And they were happy about that. But that's where we're going. We're going to a market where people are wanting to have more of an experience rather than... I mean, I wouldn't trying to convince anyone to have a chicken treat at a wedding, but that's what's happening at the moment. It's the market.
If that's what white weddings are leading to, let's talk about black. No, we won't talk about black.
And there's nothing wrong with chicken.
Definitely not.
Okay, so we're primarily on Noongar country, we're on Whadjuk and Minang country, so... I suppose is it appropriate to talk about what products are there that's missing, that we can't get hold of?
Well, I think a lot of the products that we talk about and chefs use are not available readily to the consumer.
No.
So if a consumer wanted to buy kwandongs, they probably can't. Nobody's selling frozen kwandongs in a supermarket at the moment. You can't go in there and say, it's not kwandong season, but I know that kwandongs freeze and defrost beautifully, so I'll just go in and buy my frozen kwandongs.
Okay.
They're not there because there's not enough supply for it to filter down to the retail segment at the moment.
Correct.
The best you could do would be dried herbs and spices.
Okay. Let's go back to that in a little while, what the herbs and spices, but, I mean, we know all about the ice cream now and the flavours that are available through Gather Foods. You mentioned kwandongs. Is that readily available now, or is that a challenge? Because that's mainly
definitely
Noongar country, isn't it?
Yeah. Look, if you're a Noongar, and most Noongars have their own little spot.
Of course they do.
And no one talks about that. You've gone and asked aunties and uncles about, hey, where your spot is. Yeah. They're not telling you.
No.
I've got my spot. Auntie's got her spot. I think we share a couple of spots. But no, to Auntie's point, it isn't readily available. So you've either got to buy in bulk when it's available, freeze or dry. And then if it is dried product, you got to rehydrate it because it'd be dehydrated. So those things are okay if you're working with that. But the whole part is that it isn't all year round, right? So we can get it, buy in bulk and keep it and use it as we need it. But that's the challenge. That's certainly the challenge around how do we get access to these foods all year round more often at a competitive rate? Because bush foods, because it's an industry that we need to be eating more of, yeah, like finger limes, definitely. It is an industry that it's expensive, right? So if we do more of them more often everywhere, then obviously the price will come down and be readily available in your supermarkets or in your IGA stores and the like.
So we need to be hearing from Kwandong pickers. We need to be hearing from our mob out there. They want to make a quick buck when Kwandong season's there to look at Gather Foods.
Yeah.
Look, if you've just tuned in, this is RTRFM 92.1. Keep it locked because we're staying on to talk more with Dale Tilbrook and Jerry Matera about Bush Tucker Foods and the exciting area that is that we're venturing into now. I got a feeling we're going to bring you back sometime soon to see how things are going. But let's come back after this song and talk about what really excites you about Bush Tucker and what's readily available, perhaps what the top 10 are, because I think we're talking spices. Yep, that's a quick song and we'll come back and might even cut into the song. Let's go to a song and think about the end of the show. Cry, Mama, cry.
Oh, Olive Knight. Could listen to her all day. I can't believe this hour has just flown. And I do not want to let Jerry and Dale go without giving us some key ingredients that we can incorporate into our own kitchens and use some Bush Tucker in our cooking or our Weet-Bix in the morning or whatever, where we can responsibly source these ingredients and how we can find out more out in the Swan Valley, perhaps, of Bush Tucker experiences for ourselves.
Yes, well, I mean, you will occasionally find the odd ingredient in mainstream stores. I have seen bulk lemon myrtle. Not very impressed with it because when I took the lid off, I thought, I can't smell any lemon myrtle. So, you know, not all ingredients are equal. You know, you want your ingredient to be fresh enough to be smelling good and then putting the flavours into your food. So lemon myrtle is a great one because it's probably one of the most popular Australian native herbs, not native to Western Australia, but you go to specialist nurseries, you might be able to find a tree to grow, but you can certainly get dried lemon myrtle. You can come and visit me in the Swan Valley out at Marlinup. You can do some of our experiences there, look up Dale Tilbrook experiences. And, you know, lemon myrtle, put it in cakes, put it in biscuits, use it in savoury cooking, and it has the highest citral content of any food in the world. Mm. So it's that citral gives it its lemony flavours and aromas, but also amazing antioxidant properties. So when you use lemon myrtle, and I drink lots of lemon myrtle tea, you're doing your body a huge favour. So the wattle seed, we spoke about lemon myrtle. We spoke briefly about saltbush. Saltbush, apart from being salty, sagey, thymy, is beautiful to use with if you're cooking lamb. But most people don't realise how good it is for you because it's full of protein. So there's just amazing food out there, which is quite easy to access. Those three you should be able to get hold of. And lemon myrtle and saltbush, you can probably grow yourself at home or buy the dried foods as well.
Wow. I mean, that's just interesting to our listeners out there, RTRFM 92.1, Noongar Radio and Great Southern FM. So Dale Tilbrook, go to the website, I guess just Google Dale Tilbrook and our guests from Gather Foods, Gather Spirits, Gather what else can we gather? Gather Foods. So Jerry Matera, our guest today, and Dale Tilbrook. So it's been great to have you on the show, telling us all about what we all should know and have known for thousands of generations, is now coming to a head, and we're going to make sure that your products...